I'm going to wrap up this 11-step gig. Y'all were getting a little squirmy a while ago.
Can we move this back?
He's about to go up there. Give me 3 minutes. And how about if I do this, just for you? As we go through the day, we're in 11, right? As we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful, and we pray. We ask for the right thought or action. Time frame, we constantly remind ourselves we're no longer running the show. Humbly saying another prayer to ourselves many times each day, thy will be done. Promise, we are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. See, they kept coming back to those things that blocked me over in that fourth column of the fourth step. You hearing it? They did it in, they've been doing it in all these steps, all the way through. We become, here's a promise, much more efficient. It's like, I can't go to the meeting tonight. I can't listen to the fifth step because I got this problem I need to work on. You know? I'm just way too busy. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we're not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. Third step. See how it just does this? We alcoholics are undisciplined. You think? So what do? We let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. But this is not all. There's action and more action. Faith without works are dead. My sponsor used to say, it's okay to invite God to help you dig a ditch, but it's a good idea to bring a shovel. Faith without works is dead. I can have faith in God, but I gotta do some stuff. I can make that decision, but I gotta do some stuff to get free. The next chapter is devoted entirely to step 12. One whole chapter they're going to give to this work. According to what I just read, they believe it to be the most important chapter in our book. Good? Batter up.
Can you hear me? Test, test. Can you hear me? Is all right? I can't. I know. I need to get closer, but I can't. Okay. You'd think after 20 years of doing this, I'd be better at the mic. I'm just, you know, I'm a bozo technically. I spent 7 years in Alcoholics Anonymous and never sponsored anyone. I never had a sponsor. I didn't own a big book. I've been to hundreds of meetings. I know all the little one-liners, but I can't stay sober. And in 87, when them old boys, after a suicide attempt, these old boys snagged hold of me and they qualified me and they explained to me that I had this illness and they explained the necessity of kind of getting on with this work so that I could have an experience and then turn around and give it back to somebody else. One of the things that we hear in the treatment center industry forever and around our rooms is you can't give it away, you know, unless you're ready. You know, you can't give away what you don't have. And everybody wants to make excuses for why you can't give it away. And it's like, how can I help anybody else? I can't even help myself. It's like, hold that thought. You know, because that's what we need to understand. See, if I could fix myself, I would have done it when I was eating out of dumpsters in Houston, Texas. I would have done it when I was trying to keep that first marriage alive. I mean, I can't fix myself. Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob understood it. The first meeting when they got together, they understood one alcoholic working with another alcoholic, we might have a chance of doing this nonsense. But isolated by ourselves, we're not going to be able to. I don't work with somebody because I'm just trying to help them. I work with somebody because that's what keeps me sober. It's a piece that seems to have been lost on people. We were doing a workshop down in New Orleans, and this old guy came up afterwards, and he was just furious. He was just, you know, you expect people to be sponsoring them within the first few months of their sobriety? Hell, they don't know anything about the program. I said, but whose fault is that? See, if you're just letting them come to meetings, you're right. They don't know anything about it. But it takes some effort. See, we're all teachers in this deal. The spiritual doctrines that I've read in every religion I've ever looked at is all about service. It's all about helping somebody else. And, you know, Bill's story, it says, each of us in our own way are going to do that. The little brother that just spoke, he did such a wonderful job. That's what we're talking about. We don't need another Chris Raymer. We got one. Thank you. We don't need another Larry. We got one. Thank you. We need you. And that's where the spiritual warfare comes in. I can't help anybody. I'm not sober long enough. I can't help anybody. I've got too much. That's not your responsibility to figure this out. Your responsibility is to get the shovel and get in the trench. God will show you what to do. And that's what we want to talk about a little bit. I want to touch base a couple of things in the book real quick. And look on page, we read it earlier, 14, bottom of page 14. One more time. Ebby's talking to Bill Wilson. Bill Wilson's talking about his little buddy Ebby coming to see him. Particularly was it imperative to work with others as he'd worked with me. Faith without works was dead, he said, and how appallingly true for the alcoholic. For if the alcoholic fails to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If he did not work, he would surely drink again. If he drank, he would surely die. Then faith would be dead indeed. With us, it's just like that. So understand what Bill Wilson's trying to say here. He's understanding the clear picture. If you don't grow spiritually, I don't think anybody out there would argue the fact that if you don't grow spiritually, you're not going to stay sober. Can I get a witness to that? Okay. So, but how do we grow spiritually seems to be where everybody leaves the pavement. We grow spiritually by work and self-sacrifice for others. Do my service work. Sit down and sponsor somebody. Help somebody else take some time out of my life for a minute to help somebody else have a better day. That's how I grow spiritually. It didn't say, unless you spend your, 10 hours a day in prayer and meditation, you're not going to stay. It didn't say that. I'm not making light of prayer. If prayer was going to keep us spiritually connected, then we don't have so many drunk priests out there. Preachers, clergymen, I've treated thousands of them. I'm not knocking them. I've treated thousands of physicians, doctors, counselors, therapists. We're not knocking them. The solution for them, though, is the same as it was for me, finally. Instead of somebody in the group looking me in the face and said, you can't sponsor anybody, they said, hurry up. Let's go, because we got to get you to a place where you can sponsor somebody. One of the biggest misconceptions I think that we see about sponsorship is that we believe that this is some kind of therapist kind of a thing. You know, I learned some cool stuff in treatment. Now I'm going to go relay that to my little brother, Daniel over there or whoever. That's not what we do. My job, primary purpose, the traditions tell us, is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And I can do that. I got a story and I know the solution. What else do you need? Are you going to get better at it the more you do it? Hell yes. You better believe it. It's like sex. Maybe not. I want to show you something real quick, and I'm going to get in a little handout. I'm going to give you, you guys can email me and I'll send it to you. This is in the bottom of, on bottom of page 129 in a family after. Some of y'all have completely skipped this. I don't have a family, so you skip it, you know. That's what I did with Chapter of the Agnostics. I'm not an agnostic, and I skipped it. Bottom paragraph, even if he displays a certain amount of neglect and irresponsibility towards the family, it is well to let him go as far as he likes in helping other alcoholics. During those first days of convalescence, did you get it? During those first days of convalescence, this will do more to ensure his sobriety than anything else. The absolute arrogance of us to sit in meetings and come from the spiritual mountaintop and tell you that you're not sober long enough to help another drunk. Listen, I'm not saying sponsorship. You're a week sober and you're sitting in a meeting. It may be a little early for you to sponsor. If you haven't worked the steps, you can't relay what you don't have, and so that's the way that goes. It doesn't mean that you can't get off your butt and show them where the coffee is, show them where the bathrooms are, show them where the big books are, keep them away, keep them safe, sit there with them, hold their little hand. That's what this is about. You don't have to have 25 years sober to do that. You just have to hear this sound of your head coming out of your own butt. That's what, and then all of a sudden you go, oh my God, there's plenty of people I can help. Yeah. And unless you've got some bleeding deacon in the meeting telling you you can't do that. Guys, we're dying out there. We don't have enough people to go around. Part of my job in the industry is to help people out of treatment get connected to different groups. That's part of what I do. I mean, and it's a tough bear to find men and especially women that I can send people to. I don't give meeting schedules out. You're going back to Tampa? Here's a meeting schedule. I don't do that. I give them Eric's number. I give them Dan's number. I give them folks that I know so that they can call somebody. Somebody can scoop them up and take them to a meeting where they're getting, Bonnie, you're in the trench. I'm sorry. You made a mistake of giving me your number. I don't know what to tell you. I'm going to send them to you. You'd be amazed how many people would call me on the phone and say, excuse me, did you give my number to somebody? Yes. Well, I'd really rather you didn't do that. Thank you for telling me. Loser. I got this little printout that I do, and I'll send it to you. And I'm conscious of the time. It's going to take me about 20 minutes to get through it. But I want to. Mark and I used to laugh about it. You know, in chapter 5, it talks about how it works, and there's a little deal. It talks about if you're willing to go to any length, you'll follow. I have never gone up to any alcoholic that I've ever worked with, any newcomer that comes in, and I says, "Are you willing to go to any length?" And I've never seen one of them say no. Maybe y'all have, but I've never seen. They all say, yes, I'm willing. But then we don't tell them what that looks like. See, and so when the stuff starts to get a little dicey out there, they start squirming. I can throw this back up in their face and say, excuse me, we talked about this. All right. All right. You can add and subtract from this list. Some of this is in the book. Some of it's not. Just experience over the years of sponsoring hundreds of guys. This is where they usually zig and zag. And so I just, as a. I want to show you what we're doing. Again, you can take it or leave it. The first thing I'm going to ask them to do is to be qualified. I don't care if they've got out of treatment. You'll follow. I can't tell you how many people I've talked to is, well, you know, we didn't get here by mistake. I've seen plenty of people that have gotten here by mistake. Court ordered. They weren't alcoholic to begin with. They got here. They don't know what an alcoholic is. They just left the treatment center that was $60,000 a month. And they still don't know what it is to be an alcoholic. You follow? They got their triggers list. Trigger's dead. Never mind. I'm going to ask them to sit with me for a few minutes, and we're going to go on page 20 and 21, the moderate drinker, the hard drinker, and the real alcoholic. I'm going to qualify them. I'm going to ask them to sit long enough to let me ask them the two questions that they sum up on page 44 about choice and control. And then we find out. I'm going to find out in that little exercise if they're an alcoholic. Are they a drug addict? Are they a combo job? Are they just a fruitcake? I can find out by asking them those questions. I don't have to ask them 44 questions. I have to ask them two questions. It doesn't take very long. It's the greatest gift those old timers gave me in 1987 after that suicide attempt. They qualified me. And then this question of whether I belonged in this room or not was completely taken care of. I'm home! And you can't get rid of me. That's it. I'm going to ask them if they're willing to be qualified. I'm going to ask them if they're willing to take the steps quickly. Yes, it's a race. I'm going to tell you guys, if you're working with me, we're going to work these steps at a quick pace. If you're detoxing like a big dog, I may have to slow down. If you're coming off a bunch of prescription medication, I may have to slow down a bit. I can't do it as quick as I can with somebody else. I have to be understanding about that. Some people can't read. Their cognitive impairment because of their drinking and drugging. I may have to go a little slower. A little slower doesn't mean let's take 6 months to work the steps. You'll follow? Okay. My job, primary purpose, is to get you in the trench with me helping others as quick as possible. See, my deal is I don't take you on to raise. This is the idea in sponsorship land that I'm Larry's sponsor, and he and I'm guiding his life now. Who's in charge? I am. I'm the sponsor. Absolute rubbish. Y'all follow? Because I don't know what Larry needs to do. That thing about the sex change, I have nothing to do with that. No. I was just seeing if y'all are listening. Number three, I'm going to be asking these guys if you're going to be willing to attend specific meetings. I think it's perfectly okay in early sobriety for me to really encourage my little guys that I'm sponsoring to stay in the solution. I want you to go to some big book meetings with me. I want you to stay out of that open discussion hell for a little while, which is more fun, studying the book or talking about your problems. And there's time for both of that. You'll follow, but I want them to go to meetings that we're attending. Go to some literature based. My experience is that if a piece of literature is attached to the meeting, it can't be all bad. 12 and 12 meeting, anything with the exception of a living sober meeting. One of the books that was published at the same time as Living Sober was a little book called Came to Believe. If any of y'all are having difficulty with this idea about a spiritual solution, I got to tell you that's still one of the best books that Alcoholics Anonymous ever published. It was done at the exact same time as the stupid Living Sober. And in fact, they usually give them to you as a set, you know. Read the Came to Believe. Never mind. Number four, I'm going to ask you to focus on just the big book until the steps are done. With me, I love, people email me all the time, Christian, why are you bashing the 12 and 12? I love the 12 and 12. It's not our basic textbook. It's not the original. If you read the big book and the 12 and 12 at the same time to work the steps, excuse me, you will be confused, especially around the fourth step. Bill Wilson wrote this 11 years after the big book. He was up to his ass in therapy at the time he was writing it. It's great literature. You'll follow? Let's just stick with the main message. It's tough enough to get your attention to begin with anyway. So let's... I'm going to ask you to be honest about everything. I cannot tell you. I am not your confessor here, but I got to tell you, it's a prerequisite. Bill Wilson, in How It Works, he said the one prerequisite that you got to have is the ability to be honest. So I want to talk about. I want to find out about your stupid finances. I'm going to find out about your medications. I'm not a doctor, but I want to know when you start twisting and turning 6 months from now because you're tweaking your antidepressants. I want to know what the hell's going on. You'll follow? I'm not knocking anybody on medication. I'm not saying that. I'm saying I need to know what you're on. I've been around it so long, it's not even funny. And we got a lot of people that are way over medicated and have a lot of medications that they maybe don't even need. But I need to know about it. I think it's important. That little extramarital affair that you think is nobody's business is my business. I'm not going to tell you what to do. I am not going to tell you what to do. It's none of my business what you do. I don't care who you date. I want to know what's going on. So when the shitstorm comes, never mind. Okay. Don't you know? I want you to be open-minded about anonymity. Guys, I could talk about it for an hour, but I'm not gonna. This idea about being anonymous in our own group is freaky. You can be as anonymous as you want. I just left the place and the speaker, that's all they talked about was anonymity. I'm gonna tell you guys, I can't help anybody if you don't know my last name. If you need me, my name is Chris Raymer. You are my family. I live in Ingram, Texas. At this level, we don't have to be anonymous. You can be anonymous as you want to. But this idea, with the insurance companies out there, we're asking for parity. We want the whole business. We want them to treat alcoholics like diabetics or people with heart ailments. We want them to understand that this is a disease. And yet, we won't use our last names in meetings. You follow? That's why the insurance companies look around at us like we're crazy. Let me ask you a question, just to go ahead and smack some of you. Do you think there's anybody in Florida that didn't know you were a drunk? Man, I'm walking back in the door in 1987 after that suicide attempt, and I'm sitting in the back parking lot, and I'm tiptoeing in. I don't want anybody to see me. All you had to do is look at my truck and know I was a drunk. Just big old one big dent with a license plate stuck to the back. I'm not asking you to break your anonymity about being in AA, guys. I'm asking you to break your anonymity consider breaking it about being in recovery. Y'all follow? You're working next to the lady and her son is dying of alcoholism or drug addiction and she doesn't know you're in the program because you're so anonymous. I'm just saying, I lots are being written about it. Dr. Bob says you can practice above the tradition or below the tradition. Just something to consider. They say, Chris, how come your life is so, you seem to just, because everybody knows I'm in recovery. And they know where to come if they need some help. That's, just to be open-minded about it. Willing to take service commitment. now. Everybody that comes in, if you're here, you're here 2 days, you're going to get a service commitment. Or I'm not sponsoring you. You follow? You are not, comma, the most important person here. The other guy that's coming in the door is the most important person here. Take a commitment. Help clean up. We'll see what happens after this meeting's over. See how many of you guys... never mind. Take a service commitment. 8, I want you to be willing to be accountable in all 3 parts of the program. I want you to work the steps with me. I want you to understand the importance of a home group going to meetings. And I want you to sponsor people. The third legacy is service. Our service is not just pouring coffee. Our service is working with another drunk. We so desperately need you. Just like the little brother just said, we need you and your talents in the trench with us, helping us carry the message. Guys, it's the gravy. This is like sex with no orgasm. Let's finish it. Let's go. I want you to learn the traditions. From day one, guys, these guys taught me the disciplines of 10, 11, and 12, but they also taught me about the traditions, about the anonymity stuff, about our what we're supposed to be doing here. When that basket passes by, it's not okay that you don't drop money in the basket. It's not. I'm sorry. The books in New York would be free if everybody would pay their own way. We don't. If you got a $4 energy drink in this hand, you better have another dollar in this hand. Drop it. Okay. If I'm sponsoring you, that's all I'm saying. What you do is your business. Number 10, I need you to be willing to follow some guidance around meeting etiquette. Somewhere along the line, guys, we got away from teaching the newcomers how to behave and treat in our meetings. They walk in, they don't know, it's like a big target. You know, there's like on the back is a big sign. I just got out of treatment, kick me. How do you dress in a meeting? Appropriately. That doesn't mean that you got to wear a suit and tie when you walk in, but you got to dress appropriately. It's not fair. There's a lot of sick people in this world, and a lot of crazies out there. If I'm coming in, I got a sponsee and he's coming in with his old cutoffs and old busted up t-shirt. Guys, Dr. Bob used to say, carry the message, and if you must, use words. You'll follow? You're coming in looking like a street urchin in a meeting. If I'm sponsoring you, you're not going to do that. You're not going to walk in with a t-shirt with a big old pot leaf on it. It may be your favorite shirt. I'm not saying you can't wear it at home. Don't come into the meeting and wear that crap. Y'all follow? It's just that simple. Etiquette. You're coming in and you got a little problem. You need to get up and go every once in a while like some of us do. Sit over there to the side like where Danny is so you can sneak out. Make sense? Nothing drives me crazier to be sitting in a meeting. Everybody's talking. You got a little new guy coming up and he's speaking. He's scared to death. And the guy in the front row gets up and walks out. You with us? Clump, clump with his big old boots. Clump, clump, clump. Go out. Come back in. Smoke a cigarette. You know, go back out. Take a pit. Come back in. Out there playing hot. Come back in. Buddy, if you get up again, I'm going to break your fucking legs. Yep. You can't sit for an hour? Come on. 45 minutes? Come on. It's etiquette. Wearing jewelry that's inappropriate. I was sitting in a meeting the other day at a meeting with this lady. She had jewelry from here to here, and it was gorgeous. Beautiful silver stuff. It was absolutely gorgeous. Every time she moved, clank, 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 clank. She reached for the coffee cup, clank, clank, clank. Everybody's looking like, what the hell is that sound? Everybody's looking. Nobody's listening to what's going on in the meeting because we're too busy. Y'all follow? Some of you rolling your eyes. That's not... Come on, guys. We got to make this comfortable for the newcomer. We got to explain what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. Etiquette. Go up and thank the speaker. Go up and you be a part of the meeting. I want you to be willing to look at exercise. Health and exercise, guys, is something we don't talk about so much. Bill Wilson talks about it. He refers to it in the book on several pages. He talks about it specifically. But guys, we get here, we're all banged up, and we think sitting in a meeting is going to fix that. A lot of us experience a low form of anxiety and low form of depression. Number one symptom of untreated alcoholism is depression. One of the biggest solutions for depression, aside from medication, is exercise. Even a quick walker, I'm not saying you got to go to the gym, but if I'm working with you, you're going to do something. Something to get the heart rate up, something to get moving. Your head will clear faster. Vitamins. I don't care what CNN says. Vitamins are important. Fish oil, important. And this is the stuff that we've documented for years. We've watched it in early sobriety. You've depleted lots of stuff with the stuff you put in your system. It's time to get serious about this. Yeah? I was talking to the guys the other day. I think I need to do another four step. Buddy, we just did a four step last month. Well, I don't feel like I... It's because you're lazy. You've done nothing but sit on your butt and watch TV for months now. And that's it's time to get up and move. You follow? So, that's it. I do so much better. I'll send you those and you can add to them or subtract to them. I'm going to ask the guy if he's willing to do this stuff. And he says, yes, I'm going to sponsor his butt. You follow? Somebody was talking earlier. When I understand that my main job is to get these guys through the steps, I can sponsor a whole bunch of guys. See? And some of you guys, I was in a meeting doing this sponsorship deal not long ago, and this guy came up and says, if you're sponsoring more than two people, your ego's in the way. Like, you know, if you would sponsor more, I wouldn't have to sponsor so many. I don't know what to tell you. Can I sponsor a whole bunch of them at one time? No, but my job is to get you through the step. I get you through the work. You have a spiritual experience. Now it's just about holding you accountable. I'm just trying to help you stay on the path at this point. I don't have to spend any more time with you. One-on-one, let's talk about your day. That's God's stuff. Who's in charge? God's in charge. Y'all follow? You can talk to me about anything you want to. We can do that, but that doesn't take up a bunch of time. My job is to go find me a little new one. Y'all follow? And that's how we stay connected. Let me read something to you real quick, and I'll let you go. I'm going to do this without crying today. I had we treated this little guy that wrote this, and at a place I worked, and I knew his folks, and this little guy died. He was working in another fellowship, but he passed away. And his folks found this letter and made a little copy of it for me and gave it to me. I'm not going to read the whole thing. It's just his little heartfelt desire to be better. I get so tired of people not understanding that. When I tell you that I'm going to stay sober and that I'm going to turn over a new leaf, I mean it with every fiber in my body. And the most frustrating thing for me is when I realize that I don't have the power to manage that decision to stay stopped. I listen to people sit in meetings, talk all the time, from the alcoholic's mouth's moving, he's lying. I know you're trying to be funny, but it's disrespectful. That's not true. This kid wanted to be sober so bad he could taste it. I found a clue at the end of his letter. I hope to one day make you all proud that you have me in your lives. Maybe someday down the line, I can freely give to others that which has been given to me. Did you get it? Maybe someday, down the line, I can do what the book is telling me to do today. You wait around until you're comfortable and feel ready to do this, you're going to die. You're going to continue to relapse, and people around you are going to be harmed. You are free to disagree. Bill Wilson understood the very thing. What kept him sober for the first 6 months of his sobriety? Nobody was staying sober, but he was out there pitching. Dr. Bob finally gets sober. What do? They go find number three, number four. We had a sense of urgency. It's the only answer is the spiritual solution. The only people that can relay that message with the effectiveness that it needs to be transmitted is us. And yet we have a fellowship out there that wants to slow everybody down. It's like we've got these bunch of these bleeding deacons telling people, you can't do this, you can't do that. Do we really have enough people in the trench doing the work today to tell anybody that they can't do anything? This is a train wreck already. You're not going to hurt anybody. And we're not asking you to do it by yourself. But we're asking you to start. We're asking you to give it a shot. And you get into something and you don't know the answer, you call Dan on the phone. You call Larry. You call me. You call some of these guys in here that are the old timers that have stayed around the fellow. That's why they're here, to guide us, to help us understand what this is about. You want to get this big head of knowledge and then you'll go fix this. I'm going to tell you it's going to be a scary venture no matter what you do, whether you start sponsoring it 2 years or 2 months. Men and women dying by the thousands because they don't have enough people to sit with them and show them how to do this work. How selfish can we be? Big Book is telling us what to do, and yet we got people all over the world that want to contradict this. Well, you can't at our group sponsor anybody till you're sober a year. Who in the hell came up with that? No, I don't care who I piss off. That's tantamount to murder. The book is saying go work with a drunk if you want to stay sober. But the group tells you can't do that. Shame on them. I'll do that. You're not going to do it by yourself, guys. We're going to be there right there. The guys in the early days, man, when I was getting well and getting sober, they were showing me. They sat me down and they opened and said, Chris, it's time to start chairing a meeting. I'm not sober long enough to chair a meeting. And they said, Chris, you're going to die. Stop. You've been a taker all your life. When are you going to give back? Come up here. We're going to show you how to do this. Okay, see this right here? This is how it works. And we're going to read that, okay? They're going to show me. They sat right there with me. We're not going to turn you loose. We're going to watch you and help you. This is a team effort here. We're all trying to do the same thing, help the drunk. Y'all follow? I'll say this and go and let my friend Larry take off. Real quick, we spend so much of our time in treatment. We spend so much of our time in AA talking about all the stuff that we did out there that caused harm. Y'all follow? You can go into any meeting tonight, you'll have somebody talking about all the damage they did and all the hurt. Listen. The one thing that I needed in 1987 and after that suicide attempt was hope. I didn't need to hear another war story. I didn't need to hear another scary threat. You don't want to end up like us, do you? Please. Nobody believes that they're ever going to end up like us. That's part of the mental obsession. Y'all follow? What we want to do is we want to share some hope with these newcomers. If you can't do it, that's why I introduce myself as recovered. It's not being boastful. I'm not trying to be divisive in any thought. The one thing I can do, even if I got nothing else to share, is the fact that I'm well today. That I'm recovered. And yet we've got so many people trying to be socially correct. One day at a time, struggling. One second at a time to stay so. Wow. Really? Can't hardly wait to sign up for that. Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob got together and started sharing hope, and it's like dropping a pebble in the water and those little rings that come out. You know what I'm saying? Just think about this for a second, and I'll sit down. How many of you guys can possibly imagine, because you're not drinking today, how many lives are affected? How many of your family members have gotten to the program because you put the plug in a jug and worked a spiritual program and changed your life? How many people downstream have been affected simply because you're not drinking? How many in the future are going to be affected because you're not drinking? How can you think about it and not cry? It's the only game in town. There is no medication coming down the pike, folks, to fix this problem. None. I'm in the industry. I'm around it 24/7. None. The only thing for alcoholics of our variety is a spiritual experience. And the only way these guys are going to get it, one little drunk reaching down and helping another little drunk up. That's how we do it. That's how we stay connected. Guys, I got to tell you, we need every one of you in the trench. You in your own way. You little guys, you little young guys, the little piercings and holes and shit and everything. I mean, oh my God. You got more ink than a goddamn printing press out there. You coming off like that? We need you here. We don't need to change. Thank you for being who you are, being the individual. You old guys, I'm going to tell you right now, point blank. You old bastards that have stayed in this program and continue to carry Big Book and show up, men and women, thank you. I got 25 figured out. I survived it. 26, looking a little iffy. I need somebody with 27 years to show me how to do it. That's how this works for every one of you. Black, white, gay, straight. Be who you are honestly and come into these rooms and help us. Just like Larry said a minute ago, you'll be sitting in a meeting someday and they always come up on my blind side. You could smell them. They just plop right down like that. And he says, have you got a minute? No. And the phone will ring at the house like that. And I'm going, God dang, I just like, hello. Patty will be over there on the couch just laughing her butt off. Yeah, right. Yeah, I don't want to talk to anybody. I'm watching. I mean, come on, guys. It's an episode of Hoarders I haven't seen. And you like it too. Don't even go there. I know. Of course I got a minute. No, I'm not doing anything important. And then you sit down and talk to the guy. The little guy sitting down next to you, I don't know how God figures this out. You know who has never sat here? A rich person that has no problem with women. He's never sat down next to me and talked to me. I'll get a little guy, I just look at him like that and says, you're busted flat, aren't you? Yeah. And girls are evil, aren't they? Dear, how did you know? Because that's the only people God puts in my life. How could I help? God's going to use you. All you got to do is show up. Thank you very much.
I got two mics going here, and it'll be weird. You know, we get redundant, we get repetitive. And that's what it takes for knuckleheads like me and Chris Raymer. And I'm going to repeat some of the stuff he talked about, and I might bring up some things he didn't talk about. On the very first page of our textbook, it says, this is a story how many thousands of men and women have recovered. It's the first promise of hope. It doesn't say how they're hoping to be recovering. It says how they've recovered. So when you see that, maybe you'll open this book and look a little deeper at it, you know? And you're out here and you're working with these new people, and we're talking about the qualifying. This is the second part of that step. It says we tried to carry this message to alcoholics. To alcoholics. That can't... If you can just not drink, I'm not your guy. But if you can't manage that decision, maybe my experience will help you. In that second part of the step, in the seventh chapter, it's going to tell us six times, walk away, walk away, walk away. Six times. I don't challenge you to find that in your book. Because I've got a dog at home. This is the God's truth. Little William Griffith Wilson Jr. boy. Willie G. He's a little Boston Terrier. Most stubborn little sumbitch you ever met in your life. And he knows that I hung the moon. The other night I've been away out here on this little circus trip that we do. And I come home and he was pissed. And I knew he was starving. I'm sitting there watching Hoarders. And little lug lays there in his belly just a growling. I said, dude, you got a bowl of food? And he'd look at me, starving to death and would not eat. I sit with these new guys and they're dying sitting next to me. They're sweating and they're shaking. And if they don't ask for help, if they don't accept what I'm offering, I got nothing for them. An honest desire is what the book says. An honest desire. They took that word honest. They thought that was a big qualifier, you know. Again, this time frame of a year, there's nothing in my book that says a year for anything. Dr. Bob Smith, he died with less than 15 years. Documented that he worked with over 5,000 alcoholic men and women. It's pretty simple math. That's more than one a day. He wasn't watching Hoarders. And he was still making the rounds over to hospital. and he was giving free medical help to these people. And he didn't just take their phone calls, he took them through the work. On May the 12th of 1935, Bill Wilson's about to drink in Akron, Ohio. And he knew the only thing that had worked for him was intensive work with other alcoholics. Nobody had gotten sober. But he hadn't drank. When he was pacing in the lobby of that Mayflower Hotel, he made a decision that he could have three drinks. Well, hell, we know Bill Wilson ain't never had three of nothing. I'm going to sit down. I feel lightheaded. So he did what always had worked. He sought out another alcoholic. And he walked into that gatehouse on May the 12th, 35. Dr. Bob walked in and he said, "Mr. Wilson, please help me. Please, I'm dying." He says, "Dude, I ain't got a year yet. You're going to have to call me back in a year." So we wouldn't be here today. In just a matter of days, they said, "You know, this little experiment may work for somebody else." And they went out and hooked up with Bill Dotson. And that's how this... So don't fall prey to that year thing. The first page of chapter 7, nothing will so much ensure immunity. Our experience proves that nothing will so much ensure immunity than intensive work with another alcoholic. That's not an occasional call. You know, that's intensive work. And I'm sitting next to a little guy that I sponsor on Tuesday night at a meeting in Atlanta. And they said, "Anybody that's taken the steps is willing to work with another alcoholic, raise your hand." And this little guy sat there on his hands. And I said, "What's the matter with you?" He says, "I don't have a year." I said, "Am I your sponsor?" He said, "Yeah. But the treatment center said..." I said, "I don't give a damn what they said. You have experience through the first 10 steps. Raise your damn hand." He said, "But what if they got a question on 11? I said, "You better get your ass busy then, had you?" There ain't nothing to push you through the steps quicker than somebody coming up, somebody that's real aggressive and real hungry, somebody that's hopeless. They'll push you through this work. In this book, the third part of the 12th step, and I'm going to wrap this up with you. Are you finished? He's done. The third part of the step says that we practice these principles in all our affairs, and the book is a little vague on that, in my opinion. I can be on my best behavior, and you guys can love me in this room. But if you come to my room at about 9 o'clock tonight, and something dramatic has happened back in my town or in my family, I may not be the easiest guy to get along with. I can pull it together for 9 hours with y'all. But you see, I got to leave here. Remember that take away my difficulties in the third step? I got to do this out there. It's not what happens between the Serenity Prayer and the Lord's Prayer. It's what I do between the Lord's Prayer and the Serenity Prayer. You come to our meeting, and we'll ask, "Is there anybody here for their first A&A meeting?" And they'll raise their hand, and we'll welcome them. And, you know, at the end of the meeting, we'll give out them little chips. But never, and it'll never happen in our group, that we say, "You're the most important person here," because he's not. When we do that, just consider, before y'all go getting all pissy, think about what I'm saying. When you do that, when you single out that guy that was riding down the road and saw that sign that said 164 group, and he pulled in here and thought, "Maybe, just maybe, I don't have to drink no liquor and die." And he took a shot in coming in here, and all of a sudden we're going to put a damn follow spot on him. He's the most important person here. Woo! And all of a sudden he's locked down because he knows that he has become the center of attention. We don't do that. Everybody in this room is special. October a year ago, I made a trip to Savannah, Georgia, because my partner, Charlie Gow, was dying. Charlie called himself the DCM of the Savannah group because he was the designated coffee maker. If you walked into 1531 Eisenhower Avenue on any given night of his home group, the first person you saw was Charlie Yao. I know, I've been there a number of times, and Charlie would turn around and say, "How you doing, partner? My name's Charlie Yao, and I'm really glad to see you." And he meant it. But he had been sick. He was dying of terminal cancer. He hadn't been to his home group, and he was miserable. And I went to Savannah, and we got Charlie cleaned up and put on his clothes, and I drove him down to his group, and Charlie walked in, and he didn't make any spectacle. He went and got him a seat in the middle of the room, got his little coffee. He didn't need that special recognition. He's held every service position in that group, and he is a constant fixture. But he made no spectacle because Charlie knew that he was not the most important person there. I thought he was. Went to a meeting one night, and they did that deal about the newcomer's most important person here. Well, a good friend of mine, Mary Louise, was sitting right over here. She'd just gone to the doctor the day before, and she got a real bad report. But she's sitting in that chair tonight, and she's got her little biddies around her. I think she's pretty special. Sitting in a meeting one night, and my old buddy Joe was sitting over here, not making a spectacle, had his coffee. Newcomer's the most important person here. Joe just lost his wife of 53 years day before yesterday, and he's here and he's got his boys surrounding him. We think Joe's pretty special. If you're in this room, if you're in this little club called Alcoholics Anonymous, you're pretty doggone special. There's so many of them that we bury that don't have this opportunity. You guys you didn't invest. I mean, you didn't waste. You invested a weekend of your life to be in this trench with us, to glean a little bit of something that you can take back out there and help another poor suffering Larry or Chris Raymer. Selflessness. To be selfless is our goal. You know, got this reputation about shopping carts. I'm fixing to screw y'all up. When you go to Publix, y'all got Publix here?
Yeah.
Walmart? When you walk in the front door, on one side or the other, there's a whole gaggle of these shopping carts. And you probably have never thought about this, but those carts are not yours. They're not. They belong to that store, and they have them there for two reasons. The first one is probably selfish on their part. If you got a cart, you're going to buy more. I go in to buy a six-pack of Diet Coke and spend $100. I got toilet paper, dog food. You know, that's one reason. But the other one is for your convenience because it rains here. In Atlanta, it snows. So when you push that cart out to your car and you put all that stuff in your car, they got these little cart corrals. They're as close to me today in any direction you look at. Put the cart back. It don't belong to you. But here's what we do. And jack it up on the damn curb in the handicap spot. I was at Publix one day. I was on that Harley, and I went out and put on my helmet, put my earplugs in, got the motor all ready to crank up, and this woman, a rather large woman, came out. She was parked in the next to the handicap spot in a Mercedes-Benz. And she had that shopping cart full of stuff. She loaded it all in, and I'm putting my goggles in my ear. And she got done, and she went to the handicap spot and jacked them wheels up on the curb. I made the biggest mistake I've ever made in my life. I took that helmet off and them earplugs out, and I trotted over there, and I said, "Ma'am, I don't know if you realize this, but that cart doesn't belong to you. The least you could do is put it up." Here's the posture she took. She got cocked, and boy, she lit into me. And I was frightened. I called my sponsor, and I said, "Bob, I about got my ass whipped by a very large woman at the Publix." He says, you're messing with her about them shopping carts, wasn't you? I said, "Yeah." He says, "Have you learned to mind your own damn business?" I said, "Yes, sir." You're going into a store and you see somebody on a walker or somebody with maybe who's impeded physically. Hold the door for them. It's 5 o'clock traffic. I've been in your 5 o'clock traffic. I was here yesterday. All this stupid construction. You're in that traffic and you got to get to wherever it is you're going. And there's a woman sitting over here at a stop sign or coming out of a parking lot. Try it. Stop for 3 seconds and do this. Two things happen. You feel a little better about yourself, and you've given her hope that maybe all ain't lost. 3 seconds of your life. You ain't going to get there no quicker. We had one toll bridge in Atlanta, and they just tore it down, and it breaks my heart because it was one of them little deals that I love to do anonymously. Y'all got toll bridges here? Yeah? Yes? All right, try this. I just grunt. Try this. You're going up to the toll gate. You ain't got to look in the mirror to see if it's a dump truck or an old woman. It don't matter. But if somebody's behind you, pay their toll. And then as soon as the gate goes up, haul ass. I was coming home one night. It was a Friday night, and I wasn't with anybody, and I'd gone to the meeting, and I was alone. And all these little couples holding hands and riding by and laughing and rocking out, and I'm by myself. Nobody wanted me. So I pull up through this toll gate, that's the only one we had. And I got up behind this little chrome yellow sports car. And this top was down. This gal had long flowing blonde hair, man. Tan, looking good. And I pulled up behind her and got up to pay my toll. And the toll taker said, "Little lady in that sports car, gotcha." And I went, "She wants me." Well, I'm in this great big SUV, right? And she's gone, man. And I'm going, but that was many, many years ago. And what I've realized is when I do that, Theron and I were going to the airport one day, and there was a woman behind us, and she was by herself, and she was pounding on the steering wheel, was not having a good day. And it cost 50 cents. And it completely turned her face upside down. Just be nice to people. Just be nice to people. That's all it takes. You know, my little guys come to me, and we're getting them through this work, and 90% of them want to know, when can I start dating? My rule is when you're in that night step discipline deal, when you're out there making them amends, you can start hanging out with these gals. But I said, "Do you want to have sex with me?" And they go, "Well, no." I said, "Well, you treat them girls like you treat me. Go grab a coffee. Take them to a movie. Go bowling. Go swimming. But keep your damn hands to yourself." That little guy with the pansies I talked to you about last night, or this morning, whenever it was, he did that. He treated her like he treated genderless, and great things came to pass for him and countless others. But it's about... It's about, you know, it's just about being nice, man. You got to practice this in all your affairs. You know, we go to these meetings, and, you know, this church probably gave us a great rate for this weekend. I'm just guessing. And they got light-colored walls, and you'll see these little yahoos come in and prop their chair up on the wall, get that line around there, them greasy heads on sheetrock. Well, they come in, and they'll stick and put their... They just stepped in a pile of dog crap, and they'll prop their feet up in a chair, and then some pretty little girl will come in with them white britches or skirt and sit down in that chair. Keep your damn feet on... It's just about, you know, really... Etiquette, what he was talking about. These little girls come into our place, and I don't like doing it, but you, girl, you know, put some clothes on. Really, seriously, pull your pants up. But it's about practicing these things in all of my affairs. I'm the nicest guy in the world between the Serenity Prayer and the Lord's Prayer. But what am I doing out there? Between the Lord's Prayer and the Serenity Prayer. If you're really sure you're done, I'm going to read a couple of things and say goodbye to y'all. Some people already alluded to this, but it's one of my very favorite things in the book. It says, Dr. Bob said it, if you think you're an atheist, an agnostic, a skeptic, or have any other form of intellectual pride, which keeps you from accepting what is in this book, I feel sorry for you. If you still think you're strong enough to beat the game alone, that's your affair. And they give you that option over on page 31 of our book. Step over to the nearest bar. I can't tell you whether you're alcoholic or not. But if you really and truly want to quit drinking liquor for good and all, and sincerely feel that you must have some help, we know that we have an answer for you. It never fails. If you go about it with one half the zeal you've been in the habit of showing when you were getting another drink, it says your Heavenly Father will never let you down. There is a pamphlet in the rack, one that I am kind of fond of. And what it is, it's called A Member's Eye View of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's changed colors over the years. But what this pamphlet is 25, 26 pages of a transcript of a talk by an early member named Alan McGinnis. And it's a great talk. There's several things in it that are just powerful. But Alan ended up his talk, and this is what I'm going to propose to you. Alan said, this coming Sunday in the churches of many of us, there will be read that portion of the Gospel of Matthew, which recounts the time when John the Baptist was languishing in the prison of Herod. And hearing the works of his cousin Jesus, he sent two of his disciples to say to him, art thou he who is to come, or shall we look for another? And Christ did as he so often did. He didn't answer them directly. He wanted them to decide. He wanted John to decide for himself. And he said to the disciples, go and report to John what you have heard and what you have seen. The blind see, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead rise, and the poor have the gospel preached to them. Back in my childhood catechism days, I was taught that the word poor in this instance did not mean the poor in the material sense, but also meant poor in spirit. Those who burned with an inner hunger and an inner thirst. And that the word gospel quite literally meant the good news. More than 16 years ago, four men, my boss, my physician, my pastor, and the one friend I had left working singly and together maneuvered me into Alcoholics Anonymous. Tonight, if they were to ask me, tell us, what did you find? I would say to them what I say to you now. I can tell you only what I have heard and seen. It seems the blind do see, the lame do walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead rise, and over again in the middle of the longest day or the darkest night, the poor in spirit have the good news told of them. God grant that it may always be so. Guys, thank you so much for having us.